Welcome to another episode of the Parenting Pathway Podcast. This is Pastor Dave Carl. I am the children's and family pastor for Stonebriar Community Church. Now, the children's pastor part is the children who come here. We care for them. The family part is and their parents, which on occasion can be quite a bit more challenging than taking care of the kids, but I get to do that here. And with me today, we have Megan Wall, who oversees as our ministry partner of our special needs program. Is that an appropriate title?
Pastoral leader.
Pastoral leader of special needs. And that has been going on here
since the very first Sunday of Stonebriar Community Church. So almost 21 years special needs ministry has been around.
And we like to refer to Stonebriar not— do you know where I'm going?
Yes.
Go ahead.
We are not a church with a special needs ministry. We are a special needs church.
And just tell me what the distinction there is.
So we're not a church that caters to those with special needs just as they come in. We are a church that has a focus of special needs from the beginning, from the top down. Every aspect of the church sees inclusion as a primary ministry. And so a special needs family can walk in the door and be included and invited in any part of the church, not just within the special needs ministry.
So in that first category could be we have a room where the special needs kids who typically are making noise at the wrong time can go so as to not bother everybody else.
Well,
that would be the one model, but not ours.
Correct. That is a model.
Yes.
That some churches start with.
Right.
We would like to say that we have an area where a child with special needs can go to if they need a little bit more attention, a little bit more protected environment, but then to include them back into the typical church body as soon as possible. So we are fully inclusive. Even within a self-contained classroom, we still have an inclusive model within the body.
Now, one of the images that comes to mind most often with a special needs ministry is we have a group of special needs young children that we are caring for, and which we certainly do. And we have had some very generous donors who have helped us with a special needs suite. Can you describe that for us?
Yes. So the special needs suite is one of our three areas that is considered a self-contained classroom. So it's an area for children about age 3 up until age 11 or 12. And it is a specially designed area for students with special needs. We have a sensory room, we have a quiet room, and then we have a teaching area, as well as a reception area where families can come in and let us know about their children prior to dropping them off. That's for our younger students. Then we have a more youth-oriented one for our tweeners, which is age about 12 up into 18. And then we have an adult classroom for adults with special needs. But again, in every one of those areas, part of the Sunday morning or part of the structure of the morning is to take them out into a typical environment to include them with their peers.
Right. We have a buddy system.
A buddy system for students who can be included in a typical environment for the entire service. And then we have a lot of students now who are included in our typical environment without buddies. So the volunteers in the classroom and the staff around just know what to do to take care of their needs. So they're still under the special needs ministry, yet they don't have a specific volunteer assigned to them.
And the beauty of having a ministry like this for so long is, as a part of the whoop and wharf of our ministry and our ministry partner training, that's what we call volunteers around here as ministry partners, is they have an expectation that we will very likely have special needs kids in here, and if something goes sideways, they know what to do or they know who to go to, and everything doesn't come to a screaming halt because—
Absolutely.
—we are a church, as a special needs church.
We are a special needs church. That's right. So it's just the assumption that you will have students with special needs in your area, or you will encounter families with special needs as you walk through the church on Sunday morning, or you will be sitting next to a student or adult with special needs when you're in the worship service, because that's just part of who we are. So it's taken a long time to get there, but coming from the top down again, it's just been part of our DNA that's we're accepting. Our mission statement says to encourage all people to to pursue a lifelong joyous relationship with Jesus Christ. And the word all is inclusive. That's everyone, regardless of how they enter the building, regardless of how they take in material, regardless of how they interact socially, regardless of how they speak or how they learn. We are an inclusive church, and that's seen every age, every stage, every department, every portion of our church.
I've got some special needs relatives in my extended family, and my nephew was telling me one day, he's got two special needs kids, that they have, and at the time, and this was some years ago, they had been to six churches and left crying from each one of them, because their younger boy still has a feeding port. I mean, he appears special needs. Not every special needs child does. And he just scared people. Mm-hmm. And they were going to go to church, and they were handing their kid over the half door. Mm-hmm. And it was just some mom volunteering that week. You know, but they wouldn't take them.
Yeah.
And we kind of handed them back, and they loaded everything back up into the car, and they headed home. And one of my great joys here is for special needs, families of special needs kids, adults. And I was trying to get to that earlier, that often we think of special needs ministry for young children. They're not all young children. They don't stay young children.
Right, they grow up.
So we have tweeners, we have adults, and they age. They age out. They age up. And we embrace that. But I've seen families kind of come in a little kerfuffled, and they're a little like, I don't know if this is going to... And people come up knowingly, and they're not nervous, and they take the kid from the mom, and I've seen it in their eyes. At first, there's a... Wait, you just took my kid. Mm-hmm. And then there's, oh my gosh, you took my kid, and you're okay with them and this. And then they get to go to the main service, mm-hmm. and some of them pop back in because they don't know, you know, how could this possibly go well? But it takes some time.
Yeah.
And it's as the children's pastor, I see that happening. And we have a lot of people at Stonebriar Church who come because the preaching is world famous with Chuck Swindoll. We have families who come here that have never heard of Chuck Swindoll, and they don't care.
Right.
Their children, their young adults, their adult children are embraced and ministered to, and it's a joy for me to work at a church that is a special needs church. And thank you for doing that, Megan.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's a joy to be able to see families who come in that have been turned away from churches before, who can let their guard down and not have to drop a child off and run down the hallway and scream, oh, by the way, he has seizures,
yes.
You know, for fear that they're not going to be accepted. And then to come back week after week, and to see them relax and to see them become a part of our body of Christ, you know, to join a Bible fellowship or to join a home group and to start volunteering. You know, you see these families miss the opportunity so many times to be a part of a believing body.
Right.
And even the siblings, I think that's the biggest thing for me is that every time you're turning away a family with children with special needs, you're showing that sibling that the church isn't who they say they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you're not only affecting that family, you're affecting that sibling and their family and generations to come, because they've seen the church say one thing and do another.
Yeah.
So it's just a lasting impact that we can't afford as believers to do. We have to step up, and we have to find a way to reach families who... you know, who have harder kids or who have harder situations, because they're the ones who need the grace and the love and the hope that the church has to offer. And those kids need the hope. They need the hope of Christ.
Now, if someone were perchance listening today and they attend a church and they've even had some discussions, but they don't know what to do to start up a special needs ministry, I know for a fact that you've received at least one of those calls in the last 10 years.
Absolutely. I thought you were going to say the last, like, 10 hours.
No, yeah, yes. Like several a week.
Yes, several a week. Yep, absolutely call us. We'll help you do whatever we can. We'll talk to you. We'll walk you through processes. We'll, you know, talk to leadership. We'll give you training advice. We want to do whatever we can to help other churches, because the fact is that special needs ministry is not going away. It's not a fad that's going to end right one day. I have a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old, and my hope is that they don't have to Google a church with a special needs ministry if they have a child with special needs in the next 10 or 15 years, that they'll be as frequent as a children's ministry in any other church. And it starts with just one person in a church wanting to make a difference, and that's how it started here, and here we are almost 21 years later with a ministry that's been around and thriving and meeting families and hopefully changing the way that our community sees those with special needs.
Well, I've seen it in action. Also with us today is Julie Hornock, who was attending with her husband and her children our church, just like any civilian would. Mm-hmm. And then your story changed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I had my daughter, Lizzie. I had my oldest, Andrew, and then 21 months later had Lizzie. And when she was maybe 9 months, she was just like any other kid, I thought. I mean, she had some quirks that were kind of like she would match the pitch to noises, which we thought was like, oh, maybe she'll be a singer,
musical,
you know.
Yeah.
We had all kinds of excuses for these little things. We just thought they were quirks. And then when she was about 9 months, she started to drift away from us. She used to crawl and chase her brother, and then it was like she just stopped looking up, and she would slam into the wall, and we thought it was hilarious.
We
just thought that was so cute, but it really actually was her going inside and withdrawing from the world as we know it, and she was diagnosed with autism when she was about 2 years old. And so we went through that whole transition here at Stonebriar, where before she was even diagnosed, and it was a place of where she just didn't get along in the classroom very well. She was unhappy. She was not able to follow along. She was not able to do story time. She was not able to do anything but playground time, really. And even before she had a diagnosis, it was suggested that we take her to the special needs room, which as a mom
what
was
that like?
It was, I mean, I still remember it very vividly, walking down the hall thinking, I'm not a special needs mom. Like, I don't want to be a special needs mom.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I didn't have a diagnosis. I just thought she'd grow out of it. And we walked down the hall, and it was like this really welcoming, warm room. And they had this fish tank that was really high, taller than her, and it had like bubbles. It was like a fake fish tank. And she just immediately was drawn to it, and she was happy. And even though, okay, I felt great about putting her in there, like they were going to take care of her, the minute the door closed, I just started to bawl.
Yeah.
And so I walked in and I cried the entire service long, just because this was like, when you walk through that door, you don't come out, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was really realizing that this was bigger than I thought it was. And I now had a label I didn't want. And it was really hard, but we were very, very loved by Stonebriar. And she progressed from there. I mean, she didn't stay just at the fish tank the whole time. You know,
And that this was before a formal diagnosis.
Yes, this was when she was about 18 months old, and then she was diagnosed at 2. And she stayed in that classroom for, I want to say, a year or two, just the special needs classroom. And then we started seeing some changes where she was progressing. We were doing a ton of therapy. We're doing like 30 hours a week of therapy at our house, and she was progressing, and she was able to do what she was told and sit and that kind of thing. So then we were able to move to the next step of what Stonebriar had, and that was we were given a buddy. And you know, I prayed so hard for this buddy, because it's like, not just anybody can take care of my daughter, you know, not anyone. It has to be like a special person, and they can't just hang out with her on Sunday. They have to love her. Mm-hmm. And God really has shown me over the years, you know, he places the right people in my path. And he placed Sarah, a beautiful young girl with a lot of spunk and fun, and they connected immediately. And so she kept Lizzie in the classroom, and you know, when Lizzie couldn't handle it, they went out. And sometimes they had a long playground, and sometimes they just ate snack longer. But they were able to work with her and enable her to be as much as she could in the classroom. And it was a really fantastic experience. But it didn't end there. So then slowly we started to pull the buddies off, and she was in the classroom by herself. And she continued to progress, and the church grew with her and grew to the place of, okay, we don't want you to have more support than you need. So they pulled off the support. And I think she was one of the first special needs kids to go to regular kids camp.
Yep.
And Sarah went with her. And so it was like,
we went and visited beforehand.
Yes, we
and
did.
Saw everything that they were going to do.
Yeah, we went through it. We made social stories. We went through it. And she did really good on that camp. Mm-hmm. And Sarah, you know, pulled her to get her more sleep and stuff like that, the things that she needed. It was a great mm-hmm. experience. And by the time she was 11, she tells me it's 11. I can't believe it. She's 16 now. But she actually began working as a buddy mm-hmm. for someone else in the very special needs ministry she was once in, which to me, that is like,
how remarkable.
A beautiful full circle of what God can do in that's just in her life, and how much it's changed mine is a whole another topic.
So. And to touch on this buddy system, mm-hmm. We don't ship them in. We don't buy them somewhere. The youth in our church, some of them have found their way. And two of my kids, well, all three of them, mm-hmm. have on their own found their way to be working in the special needs, and they love it. Mm-hmm. My youngest daughter now, who's just turned 16, she knows whether her buddy is going to show up next Sunday. She's mm-hmm. and that's like, oh, she's not going to be here this Sunday. And they're being trained. We don't just like, all right, limber up and go on in. It has changed my kids, so that I'm certainly that the kids are benefiting from having a buddy. The buddies are changed, mm-hmm. and they are learning compassion and love, and it's a little bit combat duty sometimes.
A little bit. There's some Sundays it's a lot.
I've seen Megan running through church and her shoes fell off somewhere in the back because a special needs kid just took off, and you know everybody's on it now, and that's just my kids have flourished serving in this ministry. So that's just an unforeseen benefit. Yeah. Value, changed the lives of my kids. So thank you, Megan, for doing that.
Well, and the beauty of it is that we've seen youth start, you know, as early as fifth grade or even earlier, you know, when they were serving with their families, and serve with us from fifth grade all the way up through high school, and then choose a profession.
Yes.
You know, and go to college. And now we have youth who are, you know, going to med school and coming back to Frisco and serving as special ed teachers here in Frisco, you know, that have come through the ministry serving. And so the families who trust us with their kids, like the Hornocks and all the others who come, they're part of that transformation too. Mm-hmm. You know, had they not trusted us with Lizzie, had they not trusted us with her care and her faith, then the students that are serving wouldn't have the opportunity to see what it's like to work with children with special needs. And God might not have been able to mold them into being great special ed teachers in our world today. And so it's everyone. It's a church that's accepting. It's families that are willing to trust us. It's youth and volunteers who are willing to do the hard stuff instead of just rocking babies, but take, you know, the challenges. And I know Lizzie's buddy Sarah has been forever changed, and their relationship continues to go. Yeah. It's not something that stops whenever she doesn't need a buddy anymore. And then, you know, on the flip side with Lizzie volunteering, Lizzie was one of the best volunteers we've ever had. Because she knew everything.
Yeah.
You know, she lived it. And she was able to connect with one of our students where no one else could connect. And you would see that student walk in the door, and Lizzie would jump up and run and greet her. And both of them just had this joy about them that, you know, we found each other.
Right.
I can use my skills to help you, and you need me to help you. You know, that made Lizzie feel like she had an important job, which she did. When she wasn't there, it wasn't the same. And so to see Lizzie be able to take the things that she had learned and the experiences that she had had and use those to bless another family that was further off behind her, that was the best thing ever on Sunday morning, to be able to watch that relationship.
Now, Julie, when you mentioned, and you were doing 30 hours of therapy in home,
yeah,
does that mean you had 6 professionals come in with vans and equipment?
I did have professionals because at first I thought, oh, I can do this. And we did applied behavior analysis, speech and occupational therapy to start. And I thought I could do it. I always think I can do everything, you know, so I jumped in and I was like, but the truth was I was frustrated. She was frustrated. My older son was suffering because I wasn't,
right.
He was having to do his own thing, and I needed to be a mom, and I needed to be the one at the end of the day that she ran to and that encouraged her. And I needed to give her the warm and fuzzies that were maybe missing in that part of her day. And so after trying and failing, I turned it over to the professionals. And so I did have probably 3 people a day in my house, 2 in the morning and then 1 in the afternoon after naps.
Now, we haven't specified Lizzie's special needs is.
Oh, so she was diagnosed with autism at 2 years old.
With autism. Mm-hmm. And there's a wide array of special needs. And there's a spectrum.
Right. Yeah, and she fell. I mean, interesting thing about her is that she fell. She wasn't ever severe, but she was on the moderate side, and to where she had no functional language. She had no ability to interact at all. And she really had no skills either. Like, there was you couldn't say do anything. She just was in her own world completely. And now at 16, today we're working on driving. So I don't know what that tells you, but she's doing great. She still definitely has autism. It's not like she doesn't, but it's like a watered down version that is very functional. And she is becoming the best version of herself, which is all I've ever wanted. I never wanted to make her someone she's not. I wanted God to use her as the gift that she is and make her shine and make her the most able to serve him, which that's all we did with the therapy. It wasn't trying to change her.
And we're getting perhaps a little ahead in your story, but because of this journey that you've taken with her, you implied that you always try to do everything and take care of everything yourself. You didn't passively accept this. You kind of went into mama bear mode. And you tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I am a doer. I've always been a doer, and I don't sit well. But when she was diagnosed, I just dove in. And I think the craziest part about it is we are given this American dream that if you just put your mind to something or you just work hard enough that, you know, it'll all work out and you can achieve anything. And when Lizzie was diagnosed, this was the first time in my whole life that I had met something I couldn't control and I couldn't handle on my own. And so it was extremely humbling as a parent and as a person, and to realize, okay, that is not true. We are sold something that is just doesn't exist. But what I can do now is I can rely on God. I can turn to him, and in my weakness, you know, he can make me stronger. And it was a really hard transition realizing that, because I really did believe I could do anything. And so I always try and fix everything myself. And then I'm like, okay, I really screwed up. And then I go back and I'm like, all right, God, what do you want me to do? So I did jump in strong and exhausted myself, physically, emotionally, mentally, financially. And although she progressed and progressed and progressed, you know, I had to find myself stopping and going back and, all right, am I doing this because it's what I want to do, or am I doing this because it's the right thing? And so every little step of progress she made was amazing. And we had to slow down way down in our life and just start to appreciate the little tiny things and to see God in everything, because it wasn't, you know, he was facilitating all of this. And he, like, one of the themes of this whole thing was that he always provided the right people at the right time for her. And it continues to be that, where it's just he's placing people in our lives even now that are going to take care of us. And It's a wonderful thing to see God taking care of his people, because he really does.
One of the factors of crashing into reality, because if you're gifted and you're smart and you have energy and things are going rather well for you, you can believe that I can do anything and anything can get fixed,
right,
as long as everything is going relatively well. But then when someone gets sick or something that doesn't change occurs in your life, you have to recalculate most everything, not the least of which is God. What did you think about God in the midst of all of this?
I mean, I never... That's a common question I get, and I was never angry or questioned him in that, but it was just... It wasn't even that I put him on the back burner. It was like I was so overwhelmed, I couldn't even pray. Does that make sense? Like,
sure.
I was so... And I remember just people saying, oh, you got to just give it up to God, and you just have to pray about it, and I'm like... I don't even have the mental ability to do any of that. And so I wasn't angry, but I didn't pray for a really long time. And it wasn't that I didn't want to, it's just that I really couldn't. And I remember feeling at one time, you know, talk about God always puts the people in your life that you need. And he just laid it on my heart to write to my husband's grandmother, who I'd never met, and just start writing to her and giving her my prayer requests, so that she could pray because I couldn't. And so it was really just a really neat... I never even met her. She died and I never met her. But mm-hmm. I feel like it was a beautiful little relationship through mail, like old school mail. And I knew and felt prayed for. And so he will place people to pray for you if you can't pray. And, you know, I never questioned him. It just wasn't like that. I mean, my faith runs deep. But I learned a lot about myself, you know, and thinking that I could do so much more than I could do, and thinking I was so much more capable than I am, because I'm like so humbled now, so incapable of really anything without his help.
Megan, have you dealt with families, observed families who were just absolutely waylaid?
Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of families come to the church at that point. You know, families who have not grown up in the church don't know the love of Christ. They're searching for anything, and then the Holy Spirit, you know, draws them to the church, and the church is where the hope, you know, can be found in Christ. But most recently, just a few months ago, I was with one of our students with special needs, and was having a really hard Sunday, and she had finally calmed down and was sitting with her and talking to her about how much God loves her, and trying to, you know, offer that hope that we try to offer every Sunday, and allow God to do the work with using the words that we say to transform their lives. And was just saying, you know, God loves you so much. I love you, but God loves you so much more than I could ever love you. And in a little squeaky voice, she turned her head and looked at me and said, if God loves me so much, why did he allow me to have this? And it's those moments that you just... don't know what to say. I mean, I didn't know what to say. But the only thing I could do is just continue to remind her that God has a plan and a purpose for her life, and mm-hmm. God's going to use her to do mighty things, and we're so proud of who you are and the way that God's already using you, and we love you regardless of, you know, what happens. We love you when you're playing nicely with us. We love you even when you're hitting us and trying to run away. But God does have a plan and a purpose, and we got to trust that God's going to do what he said he's going to do, and he does. It was in that little moment, though, that it's just that reality of, you know, that our students are thinking of this.
Of
some of them can't verbalize it. And then you know even more that moms and dads are laying in bed at night wondering if God's still there. Is he hearing their prayers? Was he hearing their prayers for their child when they were pregnant? And, you know, I don't know the answers. I don't know what to say to make everything better. All I do know is that we can be there to love and support and to continue to do what the church is called to do. And, you know, sometimes that's just praying for someone when they can't pray for themselves. Julie had shared that story with me several years ago about not being able to say the prayers herself, and that thought always comes to mind when you're talking with families who are so overwhelmed they don't even know what to ask.
Sure.
So sometimes we just offer that. Can we just pray when you don't know what to pray? Will you just send me a text and just say, I need it now? And I'll know that I just need to send a prayer up for you. And those are things that we've learned along the way because of families like the Hornocks who have been so open and so generous with their time and with their thoughts and with their experiences, that as a person without a child with special needs, I don't always know how to minister to families because I haven't lived in their shoes and I haven't lived their life. But, you know, having other families that will walk alongside us and give us pointers and advice and share their stories and how the church has helped or harmed them allows us to be able to do a little bit better job for the next family that walks in.
I feel compelled to bring this up because I've seen it, I've heard it, and it's become kind of a thing for me. But I have seen and heard families who discovered, have had a diagnosis, and the people around them at their church and their families, a common phrase that people believe is somewhere in the Bible is, but God will not give you more than you can handle. And when I hear that, I want to commit a crime.
I feel the same way. Yeah, I talk about that a lot because he did give me exactly what I couldn't handle to change me, because otherwise I would not have changed. Mm-hmm. And I would have not, I mean, before having a child with special needs, I really had no experience in that realm, nor did I care to.
Right.
I didn't have a whole lot of compassion. It really took me living through something very difficult with my own kids to lose all of that. Like, it was almost like I had blinders on because I just didn't want to deal with it, you know? And I think it's very common to be like that if you haven't gone through it. But when your eyes are opened, and I mean, you can see the pain all over. And yeah, but you have to go through it, and God will give you exactly what you can't handle.
Well, and as a pastor, scripturally, mm-hmm. the Bible is wall to wall with God giving people more than they can handle.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get perhaps 2 million people across the Red Sea. There's nothing you can do except cry out to God. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I don't know where that statement came. Well, I do know where it came from. It's God will not tempt you more than you can endure. That's a different statement.
Yeah, it's making us, I think people change it to God will not give you more than you can handle because you want to know that you're strong enough to do whatever you got to do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm strong enough. I can handle whatever because God's not going to give me more than I can handle. It's the humility of saying, oh, no, I need God. You know, I need God, and I need people, and I need the church, and I need others around me, and I cannot do this on my own. And I think Julie's story is perfect for that, you know, we have an idea of how it's going to work, and even once you get a diagnosis, you think, I can do this. I know what to do. I know the things to look up, and then it hits you again of, no, you know, this is a God-sized thing, and God can get you through this, and he wants you to trust him, and he wants you to put all of your strength aside and allow him to work, because then he gets the glory.
Well, and he will use what is the most important to you. And so, like, that was one of my questions that I was not angry, but just like, why, if you're changing me, why do you have to use my kids? Because my kids are suffering really bad, you know, and why are you using them? Just give me cancer or something, you know, or give something wrong with me that I can deal with on my own and handle it. But he knew I would still think I could handle it. Mm-hmm. And until it hit me right at my most sensitive point, did I finally surrender and say, you know what, I can't do this alone. I can't even fathom how to get through this. And it, you know, breaks you when something happens to your kids as a mom, as a parent. You know.
So as a doer,
yeah,
you were going through this journey, but at some point you decided there's too much story here for me to keep to myself.
Well, and I felt very blessed with the progress that Lizzie was making. And as she made progress, there's so many. I feel like, you know, there's that spectrum of autism, and the end of the spectrum that's more severe is so difficult because basically you can't sleep, you can't even stop watching your child for a moment, and you're just worried about safety around the clock, and it's exhausting. And as you move to the other side of the spectrum, which my daughter began doing, it was that time was freed up for me. And so even though it was hard, still there were different, we were always working on something, there were always new challenges, but the time consuming emotional thought put into it was not there anymore, and I had that free time. And there's not like too many times when I feel like God spoke to me, you know, but I knew, I remember sitting in a Target parking lot, and I was like, to sit in a Target parking lot is like a really big gift without kids. So I was sitting there and I'm like, wow, I don't have any kids and I don't have anywhere to go for like an hour and I don't really need anything in Target. And I just remember having this just major thought that you need to begin doing for women what you wanted done for you whenever your child was the most severe, which was to do events that pampered and loved on moms of kids with special needs or kids with autism, depending on the event. And so I remember that time I didn't take care of myself. I didn't think about anything else. My free time was spent researching on the internet. I didn't talk to real people in the real world for years. And so I just felt like, okay, you know, you gotta go do something about this. And so he provided the place to do it, and then that's how I started doing events to just love on these moms. And yeah, so as a doer, that was perfect, especially because as a, growing up, it wasn't like I was great at any one thing, but I was always good at a party. You know, I was always gathering people and doing stuff and planning, and I'm like, this is amazing that I get to use that, you know.
So describe this to us. What you did and how you did it, and so, how you found the women. And
yeah, well, I've done events all over now, but it started where I had just joined the board of the National Autism Association in North Texas, and I didn't really know what my role was there because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just thought I need to help because I got time. And so then we did it, the first one we found donor, we did it through the National Autism Association of North Texas. And the first one we did it at Glen Eagles Country Club, Fancy Country Club. Colleen Swindoll came and spoke. We gave everyone massages, yoga, free trees, a really nice lunch, and then they all left with gifts. And so we had like this really fun raffle game to get the gifts. And so they were just loved, but it was like I had planned for it to just be this time off where it was going to be, all right, you just get a break from autism, right. You know, but it turned out to be something more beautiful in that women were meeting women that became their lifeline for the rest of their life in this journey. And as any type of provider, whether it's through a church or through a nonprofit or through an association, you can only do so much for the individual because you're serving a large amount of people, but you can connect them with each other and they can support each other, which is what was happening. And so it was just a venue for them to meet their new bestie. And so that's what made me want to do more and more of it. So we did it for like 8 years in the Dallas area. And then I wanted to do more with it and expand it. And we've actually done one at Stonebriar, but I was felt led to write a book. Do you want me to start in on that?
Yes.
Through a podcast I did a long time ago, a couple years ago, like 3 years ago, I met a woman who said, oh, you need to meet my mom. She's just like you. And she ended up being the author of the Courage to Give series, which was a big deal about 30 years ago. And so I met with her and she showed me what she was doing. And I'm like, this is what I need to be doing. So I started interviewing families all over the world that had autism, but not just like somebody just living with it, like somebody that had done something extraordinary. And I wanted to find out, okay, what does it take to not be bitter and angry? And what does it take to do something inspirational instead? And so I met all these families and put it into a book. And then the book gave me the ability to now open a nonprofit and bring these events across the U.S. for now. I'm hoping to go worldwide, but for now, across the U.S. So
United in Autism.
United in Autism. Mm-hmm.
And the subtitle, Finding Strength Inside the Spectrum.
Yes, yes.
And this is, each chapter is a brief telling of a particular family's, often their beginning, mm-hmm. of their autism journey. And they're from all around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everywhere. Russia, Australia, Singapore, Brazil, all over. Israel. And the neat thing about the stories is that we living with autism know that our lives are nuts. Like, it is, people would not believe what would go on in our houses. And so if you want to understand autism, this is a good way to do it, okay. because you will see just the behind closed door craziness. And so every one of them starts out with a story, mm-hmm. and a story of something nuts that's happened to him, or something hard, or just something that doesn't happen to the average everyday person. And then we go into a little bit about how they were diagnosed and then what they're doing now and how they've given back to the community.
Well, it's a beautiful collection of stories, and some of them I was laughing at, and some mm-hmm. of them my heart just broke for them. And you can't know, even Megan, who works with special needs families for a living, we can't know what it's like. Mm-mm. And for someone to find themselves in this community, a temptation in crisis, of really any kind of crisis, is I have to withdraw.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. I'm overwhelmed, so I'm going to pull away.
And our case, it's that we're hurt. We have been hurt by the people around us. We have been hurt by a family member that wasn't accepting of our child. We've been hurt by a neighbor that their kids made fun of our kids. We've been hurt by gossip. We've been hurt by churches, mm-hmm. you know. And the thing that's hard about churches is whatever the church does to us, that's God. So it's really right. tough to separate that unless you have a deep background.
That's how it's received.
Yes. The people running the churches are just human, you know, right. but it's hard to distinguish that when you're in crisis, and it's hard not to feel betrayed a little bit by God. And so we just take these slow step back. It's not like, oh, we're just going to isolate all at once. It's like we slowly step back as we get offended and hurt, and as we can't relate. I mean, I remember one time going to a friend's house. It was one of my very last normal friends. And do you know what a bumbo is?
Mm-hmm. I don't.
Okay, yep. So it's a seat that you put your baby in, so the baby can sit up on the counter.
Okay.
And I was potty training I guess she was already potty trained, but she was 5 at the time. So we went to this friend's house, and we thought, okay, we can do this. Like, we can be a normal family for one day, which we can't. We were joking ourselves, you know. But we went to this friend's house, and she's not, you know, wasn't used to my daughter. And so we went over there, and I was just trying to keep her from destroying the place. And then she saw this bumbo, and it looks like the potty in Once Upon a Potty.
Yep.
And so she ran over, and before I could get to her, and she's 5, so she's huge, she stripped all her clothes off and just sat in it and peed. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I was mortified because, I mean, there's a lot of levels that's wrong.
Right. Several things to point at here.
And the friend was nice about it. You know, I paid her back and bought her a new one. But it was like, even though I think she was probably being more understanding, it was like I was so mortified and I was so upset with the situation, and I didn't hear from her what I wanted to hear to make it better in my mind. But mostly it's probably just me projecting a whole bunch of stuff on her. And so, you know, that was kind of, I was like, forget it. We are only hanging out with special needs families after that. Like, we can't go anywhere where I have to explain everything constantly. It's exhausting. So it happens slowly like that.
The inclination to withdraw in a crisis has to be battled against, and it just flows out. Part of your story is, and we received help here, and we allowed these folks to mm-hmm. come in, and not everybody would instinctively do that or have those things nearby.
Yeah.
Talk to a parent who's not sure if they're ever going to leave their own house again because it's hard and scary. And I mean, what?
Yeah, I mean, you have to just make, it's like anything else you don't want to do, you just have to make yourself do it. And so you have to figure out first, how can I safely do it? And then second, where can I go? And Lizzie would not be the girl out in the world that she is today if I had not forced her and had massive meltdowns in public and had to leave 10 million times. Like, maybe we go to a concert and she stays 5 minutes the first time, but the second time she can stay 10. Every little thing with our kids is little bits of progress. Mm-hmm. So if you think they're going to get older and then all of a sudden they're going to be able to do it, that's just not possible. So you have to start little, and even if it's just getting in the car and going somewhere and talking about it, go somewhere and then turn around and come home. But the next time, go somewhere and open the door and get out, stay for 5 minutes. So I would just encourage people to really take little steps of progress starting now, because if not, you will be stuck in your house forever. And to seek out other families that are going through the same thing, because they'll understand and it'll be easier. And they'll have already created opportunities for you where your kid can succeed more easily.
So if you were looking on you 14 years ago, 15 years ago, and you knew what you know now, what would you tell Julie 14 years ago?
I would tell myself, just don't parent for anybody but your own kid. Like, look at who your child is and compare them only, compare your daughter to only your daughter. And all you're trying to do is help her become the best version of herself. So don't parent for anyone else. Don't tell her to be quiet if she's not capable so you look good. Or don't take her in a scenario knowing she's going to fail without prepping her. Just parent for the child you have in front of you, because we always think that we know what's best for our kids and what we want our kids to go, but it never works out like that. God has a totally different plan for each of our kids than we have, and we need to look at that and just take it step by step instead of trying to plan it out so big. You know, let's just get through the day and parent to help your child today.
Well, that's sound advice.
It's good advice for anyone.
Yes, this is good. That would be good pastoring to say something.
I was
like
able
that.
To take a lot I learned from Lizzie and then use it on my older son.
Well, Julie, thank you for the book. Thank you for your service to other mothers of autistic kids. And Megan, thank you for your years of service to our church and our special needs parents who need a special amount of care, and because their lives are exhausting. And I'm so pleased with the churches who have made space for this, because this is a community that is ready to be received, and not everybody that goes to church is ready to be received. They're not open to a lot of things. This community is, and thank you for doing that. So if you are interested in the Julie's book, which is United in Autism Again, Finding Strength Inside the Spectrum, and the foreword by Dr. Temple Grandin. Good catch there.
Yeah, I was thankful for that.
And I got mine on Kindle. You can get yours through Amazon or your local bookstore, so I would recommend that highly. Well, this is Dave Carl, pastor of children and families at Stonebriar Community Church, and remember to not do parenting and don't do life by yourself.